late October in Saddleworth, a collection of scattered villages that skirt around the edge of the Pennines. Arguments still rage on whether they are in Yorkshire or Lancashire. Red or white rose. The air is clean and fresh. The trees are golden and red, and their leaves will drop any day now. Saddleworth lies in a valley 7 miles long, cut out by the River Tame, long before man came to walk the land. He has been around a long, long time, too. Stone Age man was here. Roman roads run through. Even a church that started its life in the 1200s. Many ghosts walk its fields, its hills, and its buildings. This area is so old it is mentioned in the Domesday Book. Farms sit on the hillsides of this valley. The meadows are lush and well watered from the many days of rain. The rugged moorlands at the top of the hills are far too inhospitable to sustain animals and crops. Vast and desolate, one should always stick to the footpaths. Rocky, with thick clumps of heather and peat, these hills are often covered in fog. They will always be watching over this valley, as if to say, one day we will claim you back into our wilderness. Old walls, parts of which have crumbled to a litter of stones, show where ancient boundaries lie. Sometimes an aged milestone can still be read, but usually to a place that no longer exists. Within these areas are small collections of trees, hidden paths, caves, and ancient dry riverbeds. Plenty of places to hide. It was during the Industrial Revolution that Saddleworth's economy and population really grew. The woolen mills and later cotton mills meant that this area sustained its workers well. Giant, seething black buildings with tall chimneys became the centre of these villages. And as these mills grew in size, so did the number of small dwellings clustered around them. The magnificent buildings yawned in the morning, sucking all the workers in with its first breath, and then in the late afternoon, tired and ready for a few hours' rest, it disgorged them back out onto the streets. The railway and the Huddersfield Canal cut through this valley, taking goods east, over the Pennines, into Yorkshire, or west into Manchester and on to Liverpool. The houses traditionally are built in grey stone, the same as many in Yorkshire. These workers' houses run along the valley within these villages. Roads came and more houses were built. Modern larger homes with better facilities. They spread upwards from the arteries of this community, up the hills, claiming their right to live in the fields and meadows and trees. With the decline of the textile industry, the vast mills lay empty and hollow, some to be demolished, some to be converted. Over time, the filth and grime of the mill years, the smoke and stains, have been cleansed from the buildings, but they are not forgotten. The modern Saddleworth's industry is its heritage and culture. The tourism industry is booming. The original little grey houses now have brightly painted doors and window boxes. Those old dirty streets sparkle with new coffee shops, a museum and gift shops. Boutiques and delicatessens, a quaint post office. They have it all. Pubs with real ale and open fires. A civic hall, which hosts many famous names. There is a cricket club, a golf club, and a rugby club. So many festivals. Brass band, Morris men, canal, folk, music. Always a reason to visit here. Thousands of people descend on Saddleworth on Whit Friday to watch the church processions of witness, waving colourful banners, and each with its own brass band to herald it on its way. The centre of this community, the largest of the villages, is Freemere, named after the black friars that lived in the grange that sits high and dark on the hill above the village. The highest mountainous Pennines border the north and south of Freemere, a deep quarry cut into the side of the north face. Many dark deeds have been done here. To the east, the great viaduct, which has the canal boats underneath it, cuts the village off from its neighbour there, and to the west, a long road that runs along the side of the old railway line. Freemere has the only bank and police station for miles, a high school, and a beautiful primary school in the hills with fantastic views. It is on a bus route, with buses between Manchester and Huddersfield every 10 minutes. The houses aren't cheap, and all have sloped gardens, being hillside dwellings. The old Friar's Grange sits and broods above Friarmere, huge and cut off from the rest of the village by a wall and large metal gates. For years a chain and padlock have been around the two gates. No one likes to walk past there, not as it is usually in anyone's general direction of walking. It is out of the way and down a small dirt road. Dandelions and thistles push in from the sides, making the route even narrower. It is a haven and sanctuary for insects, wasps and mice. The house is the only thing at the end of the road, and, as it has been empty as far as anyone can remember, it is mostly forgotten. Another reason that no one likes to walk down there is that it backs onto the old graveyard. Again, a metal lock gate is on the back wall of the grange, but here it is just a small, arched, person-sized gate with ornate curves, a shortcut to the old church. The house dates back to about the 17th century. A look in either gate would find tall grass and weeds that block the view. The house can be seen from a distance, rising above the walls in the centre of the ocean of grass. The closer one gets, the less there is to see. The only person that is aware of the Grange on a daily basis is Christine. Christine's house is halfway down that small dirt track, and not many people visit Christine either. She has alienated most of Friarmere with her behaviour in the past. Overbearing, money-grabbing and cutthroat, she owes money to more people that can squeeze in her kitchen. Christine became quite excited about 6 months ago when a for sale sign went up at the Grange. She would have been interested herself if she had got the money and the inclination to renovate. Her own house desperately needed it. Everything was rickety and old, low ceilings and lots of small rooms. But she told any visitor that came that it was a period, and that saved her from doing any work to it. She did, however, like the prestige that owning the Grange would give her, so was quite annoyed when she saw one day, about a year ago, that it had indeed been sold. Often on long dark nights, especially during the winter, she thought she saw a dull light in the windows, moving from one to another. "It's my imagination. I must be tired. It's probably not the Black Friars walking around that old house, looking for someone to haunt," she thought. She took a look from her window towards the Grange for any signs of the new owners whenever she walked past it. Christine was determined that if she couldn't own it, she was going to make sure she made a connection with the new owners and spend as much time there as possible. There could be good business deals to be done. About a month ago, about 10 p.m, she saw a removal truck's lights going past her house down the track to the Grange. She thought that this time of night, a visit from their new neighbour would be unwelcome, so she would wait until about 10 in the morning. Christine went to bed, drifting off to the most wonderful dreams of owning the Grange. She awoke the following day, covered in sweat and panting. Somewhere through the night, this had turned into a nightmare. It was 9 o'clock. She got up, dressed in her most impressive outfit, and did her hair. After putting on an extra layer of bright red lipstick, she set off down the track. Christine held a business card with her personal number in her hand. Swinging her hips to the left and right, she worked her wiggle dress. Along with her high heels, she thought she looked thinner and sexier than ever today. She regretted it instantly as she walked on the rough and uneven ground, turning her ankles every 30 seconds. When she got to the bottom, she was disappointed to see the chains around the gates again, and the truck nowhere to be seen. She shouted and rattled the gates. There was no response at all. If she didn't know any better, she would think it was still empty, apart from the rats. She decided this would have to wait for later today or another day. Rain had been forecast for later, and she didn't want to come down here in her wellies. As she walked back and was slightly up the hill, she felt like she was being watched. Eyes burned into her back. She glanced back at the house. All the windows still looked empty, with no curtains. She started walking again, and immediately had the same sensation. The eyes watching her were on the roof. The vampire had scaled the outside walls, flat on his stomach. He moved from side to side, defying gravity, as he crawled like a lizard. He lay low, flush against the tiles. The eyes were red and the mouth open, hungry and sensing. She shivered and hurried home.